This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Today we're going to talk about higher gas prices in the summer months, immigration reform, Becky Lockhart making people smile, and a little bit about Karl Rove picking on Hillary Clinton. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, a lively and informative conversation about current issues facing the state of Utah. I am so pleased to be joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
You represent the left, and on the right, State Representative Greg Hughes. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Natalie.
It's summertime, and summertime means higher gas prices. Heats up, a lot of summer travel, supply and demand kicks in, and we just see the price per gallon go up. I think the price per gallon in the last 4 weeks has gone up about 28 cents. Makes the case that the economy seems to be doing okay. And it makes the case that you could probably have the people who drive pay a little bit more for their transportation and solve some of the funding problems we have in Utah. Greg?
I'll tell you, any amount that you pay for a gallon of gas that gets closer to $4, I think has a direct impact and a negative one on our economy. I think that it's a frustration. I know that if you see the swings in gas prices go the way they do, some would say it would make an argument that you could tack on a tax and no one would know the difference. I will tell you that a price percent per gallon as cars drive further on a gallon of gas and without contemplating or accounting for CPI or inflation is just a absolute dinosaur of a tax and is a completely pointless way to try and gain revenue for roads.
Completely pointless way is the best way we have out there. We ought to be cranking up that per gallon tax dramatically. It's 24.5 cents. It's been locked at 24.5 cents since the mid-90s, and it needs to go up. We are taking money out of our school children's fund, and we're sticking it into building roads while we subsidize our Hummers. We ought to be using a higher gas tax to discourage consumption. As well as, you know what? Transportation ought to pay its own way. It ought not to be paid for on the backs of our school children.
You don't have an argument from me, but I'm going to tell you that it ought to be a
You're
sales
gonna
tax.
You're going to talk anyway, though.
You got to have some kind of something that's indexed, something that actually grows as inflation grows, something that isn't a percent per gallon. It's a pointless way to do it.
You know, Greg, I just got to disagree with you. And I say that because, you know, you say we've got to do something that grows with inflation. So you're willing to put more money into it. And I'm sort of like, all you have to do with the gas tax is raise it every so often. And you've accomplished the same thing. And you let the people who impose the cost pay for it. You help air quality. And you might get people to drive less and we build fewer roads.
Well, I'm glad you brought that last
Thank
point
you.
Up because I think there's a conspiracy here with Jim. I don't think he has any interest in reasonable gas prices. I think you hate the combustible engine and you want to see all motor vehicles cease operation immediately. And this is your big plan. You want to just make driving and fossil fuels so unpalatable, so expensive, so unreasonable, we just give it up. That's your plan.
Except mine. I want to be able to text and drive my own car.
I just want to just say quickly, I'm just on one. I'm just going to say that when we have a sales tax, nobody believes that their taxes are being increased every year. However, if you take that percent and you decide to increase it 3 cents every 5 years or whatever it is that you'd like to do, that is, in fact, a tax increase. So why not have it gauge with what the price of
Great.
Goods and services
Sounds
are and
like
have
a good
it be
plan.
Indexed.
Or put a sales tax on gas.
Something.
But don't let people drive for free. I attended
I
a
agree.
Meeting this week, our Senate President Niederhauser addressing business leaders, and he talked about the imbalances in our state budget. And he talked about how we're taking income tax now and using it for higher ed to the tune of several hundred million dollars. And we're using now general fund that used to pay for higher ed to pay for transportation to the tune of about $400 million. And you know who's getting away free is the driver. And the driver shouldn't get away free because the driver's getting this benefit.
You know what? That's
Do I sound like an economist, guys?
I'll tell you this. Let's give the listeners some background here. That's a constitutional amendment passed in the 90s.
Yes.
It was public education advocates as well as higher education advocates that joined forces to say, instead of our state income tax being dedicated to our public schools K through 12, let's go K through 16. And let's create a stronger lobby for that revenue source, for the income tax, state income tax. You know what? Be careful what you ask for, I guess, because this is the problem people are now complaining about, but it was really driven by these institutions or these stakeholders.
I was working in the budget office when that passed, and the real issue was that income taxes were growing like crazy, and sales tax was not growing. And it wasn't growing so much. Well, because of remote sales and because of, we're not taxing services. That's the growth part of the economy. And we just needed more flexibility in our state. We opened up those funds.
Hmm.
Anyway, you get what you get. But staying with cars, let's go to something else with four wheels, ATVs. We had a lot of news in the past week about ATVs in southern Utah. The Sagebrush Rebellion 4.0, whatever it might be. Jim, I'm assuming you're outraged.
I'm outraged.
You don't sound it. That's not Jim outraged.
I am so outraged. I'm just keeping it inside because I don't want an explosion here.
You don't need brain matter on the walls.
I do not point my finger at Mr. Bundy or the crazies in Nevada or even the people in southern Utah. I blame the legislature. They should be the adults, and yet two sessions ago, in their fury and in their rage, I was in that governor's boardroom when every single member of the Utah congressional delegation, except Matheson and all the governor's people, were there as House Bill 148 was signed, which requires, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't ask. This is a state law requiring the federal government to turn over virtually all the public land in Utah to the state of Utah. And they were there, and they were foaming at the mouth, and they were frenzied, and they were getting ready for the election. It was their own council said this is clearly and absolutely unconstitutional. And yet our entire Republican establishment went into a frenzy, pass this, continue to work up this right wing about public land, and instead of rolling up their sleeves, sitting down with Washington, and coming up with sensible, reasonable solutions, they are there mucking in the politics and throwing all the poop on themselves as they roll around. We need responsible adults to be at the table right now before Obama leaves, and frankly, I don't see them in the Republican Party in the state. They're too worked up in the frenzy of it all.
Greg, he started out and then crescendoed.
He got himself going, which is nice. It's early in the morning. We need more caffeine in here. Here's what I wish we could do. I wish we could take every sensible American and take them out to the Uinta Basin, take them to some of these areas that somehow the environmentalists and the Democrat administration thinks that you ought to put guns and armed people in front of this land to keep people from walking on it, and just get some perspective of what we're talking about here. I see a lot of protests, civil protests. I've seen people, get in front of a power plant because they think that the fossil fuel used is damaging this planet. I've seen a lot of causes. For this government, with that heavy of a hand, to say you can't take your ATV on this dirt, in this desert, and to make this the line in the sand, its government against its people, is so disproportionate. And I think if people could actually see that, they would think, people who think that this is the big issue, this is the one that's going to impact and improve or hurt the human condition, it is way out there. That's the extremism going on here. This is not the area. If these guys, they didn't just take land that they've never ever touched before. This was property, or this was land that they had been and their families have been accessing for years and years. Arbitrarily said, you can't use it anymore. Is that really what the fights that are confronting our families in this country today? Is that really where we want to draw the line and take up arms against our citizens? Really?
Public land makes another showing on both sides of the aisle. Very quickly, we have another sort of driving theme. The law that went into effect that precludes people from dialing while they're in their car. Greg, you voted for it.
I did.
I don't know, Jim, if you voted for that. Is that a little too heavy-handed?
No, he loves Big Brother. He loves this law, I'm sure. Here's the thing. I'm not even giving my friend Jim a chance here. I voted for that law, but I'm gonna say I was tricked. I did not know you can't dial a phone while you're driving. I thought you were allowed. They said, you can be on the phone. Oh, go read the fine print. Yeah, you can receive a call, but you better have a way to dial without touching your phone. I don't have that.
Greg, you're supposed to read the bills before
vote
on it. I read it. I gave it a cursory review. I did not see that you can't dial your phone in your car. This is just shut me down.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In the next segment, we'll talk about Karl Rove picking on Hillary Clinton.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. In a minute, we're going to talk about Karl Rove, but I wanted to start out this segment by talking about immigration in the news again. And, you know, we've talked about immigration on this program before, but what's new is simultaneously this week we had in multiple states, multiple news conferences with a great cross-section of faith leaders and business leaders and political leaders stand up and say, come on, let's get it done. And we just got to ask ourselves, I don't care if it's incremental, I don't care if it's comprehensive, I have a preference, but I just want to see something happen. Jim?
Not going to happen in Washington because the Republican Party, once again, in Utah especially, but nationally, they are cowering in the corner against their crazies in their party. And they dare not open their mouth on immigration. Look what happened to Rubio. Senator Rubio was part of that mainstream. He was part of immigration. There was a serious solution. They came down on him like a ton of bricks, and he has spent the last year and a half kind of slithering over to the right to try to make amends. Until somebody gets control of the extremists in the Republican Party, we're not going to have a national discussion and solution to immigration. It's obvious. The outlines are there. It ought to be done. We need some courage in the House of Representatives, led by Utahns like Congressman Bishop. Where the hell is your stand on immigration? Same with you, the guy I can never think of, that kind of anonymous congressman who represents Salt Lake.
Stewart.
What's his name?
Oh,
yeah,
Congressman Stewart,
oh,
sir.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
a
yeah,
fine,
yeah.
A military man, an author.
Yeah, yeah.
Patriotic.
Need I go on?
You need to. And then Chaffetz. Where are you standing on immigration? You've slithered off into Never Never Land. Get the problem solved.
You've got all these Republicans in the Utah congressional delegation. Are they doing enough for you on immigration?
No, we've talked so much about this issue, and we've talked about the issue itself, but let's go right where you've gone, Natalie, to process. I absolutely agree with you that the process here has broken down. For conservatives and Republicans like myself, we love Ronald Reagan, President Reagan. This is our North Star. This is what we all aspire to. He got something done. He rolled up his sleeves. He did something on this issue. It wasn't perfect. Perfect in policy cannot be the enemy of good. We need something good. Now,
something.
I am going to say, though, that if you listen to Jim's narrative, he lays it all at the feet of the Republican Party. I'm going to tell you that this president and this administration is as strident to the left as he would accuse the Tea Party or the conservatives of being on the right. This is why the Obamacare or the ACA didn't receive a single Republican vote, because there wasn't a willingness to work with Republicans. This process generally has to improve. It has to improve on both sides.
Yeah, we got to get people to the productive middle. Thank you for making my point, Greg.
Did I just do that? I gotta
I want to read you guys a quote.
Let's rewind that.
Rewind. Let me read you guys a quote and get your reaction to it. Salt Lake County Sheriff Jim Winder was quoted as saying this. You know, we have more clarity as it relates to animal control ordinances than we do as it relates to immigration. Think about that. Salt Lake County Sheriff.
Look, we know what needs to be done. The political will and the part of the Republican Party who are trying to have it all ways simply isn't there. The House of Representatives that the Republicans are in control of, the Senate's already passed an immigration bill. If they would just do their work, and Utah guys are, what's his name again? The anonymous guy from Salt Lake?
Congressman Stewart.
He's not from Salt Lake.
He's a member of Congress.
He represents
this is
Salt
a
Lake.
Congressman, sir.
Yeah. He's kind of anonymous. You know, he's just kind of.
There is no anonymity
hasn't
here.
Hasn't done anything. I mean, that shadowy guy.
What's his name again?
What
are you saying, shadowy? I don't even know. We might not even be talking about the same person. Are you talking Matheson? His name's Jim. I think you're talking about Jim Matheson.
No. What is his name? He writes all of these Mormon rapture books.
His name is Congressman Chris Stewart, and he is well-known, sir. Well-known.
Yeah.
Not in Liberalville.
Does he have a bobblehead? Does Chris Stewart have a bobblehead?
No, he's not famous enough to have a bobblehead. even his family isn't sure who he is. So, you know, we got problems there. So anyway, where's the leadership from the Republicans? They're little mouses in the Utah congressional delegation on immigration. They dare not open their mouth.
Okay, listeners, I'm going to give an experiment right here. This is why you're not getting any results on illegal immigration. Jim, I will give you this as a Republican. People that are here that came here illegally, we'll give them residency, we'll let them stay here, we'll let them work. However, if you want to be a citizen and be able to vote for a Democrat, you would have to go through a pathway, and we can work on the pathway to entrance and citizenship, but it will not be the 12 million that are sitting here. We will give them residency to work, but they will not become voting members of the public. Would you vote for that? Would you support
Absolutely.
That? You would. Because that right there.
That's a good compromise.
The biggest.
We're making progress. Guys.
All Republicans are worried about is they're going to get voters, and they've been so horrendous toward minorities, they're afraid they're all going to be voters and vote against them. If that's the block,
I'm going to argue that this is this is a bluff from Jim, because I'm telling you that every single effort on illegal immigration is to find ways to create a voting block and to create more political or leverage more political power, and it always seems to boil down to the political leverage that can take place. If we got rid of that conversation, I think we could find some solutions.
Yeah. And I'll just say from the political middle that fixing this problem is good for both the Republicans and the Democrats, and it's great for our economy. Karl Rove, let's talk about him for a minute. He went to my high school, Olympus High. He went to my university, University of Utah. He's been questioning Hillary Clinton's health, which is
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this since 92.
Well, that's something to do, you know, some rising candidate. You remember in December 2012, I think she had a stomach virus. She fell and hit her head. It was during the Benghazi problems and everything.
Amazingly, she couldn't appear before Congress. Yeah, this was a terrible accident.
But Rove was quoted as saying, 30 days in the hospital, you know, for bumping her head. And when she reappears, she's wearing glasses that are only for people who have traumatic brain injury. We need to know what's up with that.
It's a brilliant, brilliant move, and I'll tell you why. Either she had an injury that was so terrible and so traumatic that she had to spend 30 days in the hospital, so we ought to know why and what happened that was that bad, or she was ducking an appearance before Congress. Ooh, it's one or the other.
I thought you would say that, Jim, but we heard it from Greg.
It was either a duck or it was something very, very serious that we don't know enough about. What
so
say you?
So pathetic. I mean, the Republicans are in this position where Hillary is so popular, they are so terrified. Their first line against it was Obamacare, and now Obamacare in the states where even where Republicans have taken it is tremendously popular. They are kind of repeating to themselves, Benghazi, and Hillary fell, and she is not capable. I mean, it just shows how pathetic the Republican situation is that they're going to Fox News and coming up with these documentaries that Hillary didn't really fall, and she needs to wear special glasses. Give me a break.
I will say that the only thing I remember about the whole ordeal is the glasses. She did look different.
She sure does. She wears those glasses. It's like she gave up. It's like, I'm in public and I don't even care anymore.
So, you know, Karl Rove's doing his thing. Let's go to another interesting event. This is more local, but Speaker Lockhart, she, you know, appeared at a Ben McAdams fundraiser and showed her sense of humor.
She did.
I think she got the crowd going. And, you know, she directed her sense of humor. I brought to the studio today a bobblehead of Governor Herbert, and she spent, I think, I wasn't there, you guys were there, most of her time taking on Governor Herbert. What make you of this?
Well, it was kind of a narrative that was created on the first day of the general session.
We got the narrative word in the program again, Jim. Good
I
job,
love that
Greg.
Word.
Keep going.
Frame or be framed. Remember that. So we started at the session. It became kind of a theme, and I think that the speaker is being consistent, and I think there has been some – I think it was just – it was in jest. You've seen those – what do they call them? The correspondence dinners where everyone kind of roasts the president, and he even teases himself. We got to be good-natured. We're politicians. But look, the fact that we were all at Democrat Mayor Ben McAdams' event tells you that we were all in
good spirit.
You know, we're not taking ourselves very seriously. I think it was in good nature, but it shows that there may be a race sizing up there in the future.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. You've been listening to Greg Hughes, and we're going to now turn the time to Jim DeBacchus to tell us what he thinks about Speaker Lockhart taking on the governor in that comedy hour.
I can't wait to see those two Republican titans on the right. We have the do-nothing, dithering governor who's managed to go 6 years without actually doing anything. And on the other right, we've got the speaker who really believes in giving every kid an iPad will solve our education problems. Watch them go. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, and the irony is that they were at a fundraiser for Ben McAdams, who I think people are saying is the rising star in Utah politics.
I'm predicting an incredible clash, a nuclear clash, between our new lieutenant governor and Ben McAdams. My sense is that those two, over the years, are going to be in tremendous struggles. They're two bright, wonderful young people that are the futures of the parties.
Why don't you have a real battle and put Congressman Matheson against Ben McAdams in a primary for governor and see who wins out of the two of them? You're like Don King and some other boxing promoter where you don't put your big fighters against each other. You just keep them, playing against other people.
Let's have a real fight. I'm coming at this from the political center, and I always say that we take the best ideas from the right and the left and solve problems, and I'm trying to persuade you guys to come along with me there. Ben McAdams fits that mold, does he not?
Why everyone sort of likes, even if it's a guilty pleasure, why we like Mayor Ben McAdams? Because he's a Republican. Because he acts like a Republican, he's conservative. Because he's sensible. Because he governs like you'd think a Republican would. And we get to say, look, he's got a D next to his name, but he's just like us. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Jim, do you agree?
Yeah, right. Ben McAdams is a proud Democrat. And I just have to go back. I could have saved this for my rant. Karl Rove, who ought to be in jail, remember? Who, for his own personal political gain, turned in an active CIA agent. He absolutely should have been in jail and in prison doing hard time now. Who cares what Karl Rove said? And by the way, there was a little scandal at the U that bypassed. They offered him a PhD, an honorary PhD, and then they withdrew it, and he got all hissy. I mean, this is not a good guy.
This is what I love. If you bring up Benghazi, if you bring up, he just belittles it all, right? It is all. But then he gets into some deep grass discussion of, and we're all supposed to take it seriously about Karl Rove. This is what I love about politics. If it's Nixon lying that he knew about the break-in days after it occurred and he didn't want to say he knew it that soon, he lied. And anything he lied about, it didn't even matter that what the topic was. It was that the president of the United States lied to the American people, and that's a deal killer, right?
Yeah.
And then you have President Clinton who, in a deposition lies, and it's this whole, look at the Republicans just trying to, come up with this Monica Lewinsky. They go right to the source, and it's not important enough to pay attention to. It's not fair. I'm just telling you.
You guys both do this, though. I mean, just speaking from a partisan point of view, you mentioned, Greg, that the Republicans like Ben McAdams because he's a Republican.
That's
behind
right.
the scenes. And it's sort of like, well, why don't you just like him then? Why don't you just like his policies and things? I mean, why does the R symbol come into play at all?
Because the Republican Party, by and large, if you look at the averages, is correct. It's right. That's why we're one of the best states managed in the country.
We have to go to gripes, but I want to give you the chance to rebut that.
There's no rebuttal. It's self-evidently preposterous. It doesn't even need a rebuttal. And I yield to the person from the lower house on
that. I love it. Greg, let's go to gripes and start with you.
My gripe is my Pittsburgh Penguins. I had a beard, my playoff beard, going. It was to the chagrin of my whole family. It was actually itchy. I couldn't even stand wearing it, but I was a loyal fan. That rotten team of mine was up 3-1 against the New York Rangers and won 2 games in Madison Square Garden and then just blew it, just melted down and gave that series away in Game 7 last night, and I am just disgusted by my Pittsburgh Penguins. I can't. I wish the worst for them.
What do you go to next?
My baseball, my Pittsburgh Pirates.
They're
having a great May.
All right.
They're coming back.
I'm excited. Jim, your gripe.
I think Greg cares about Pittsburgh sports. I mean, really, who cares about Pittsburgh sports anywhere out of Allegheny County? It's okay.
I love that Allegheny County.
John and Vernon Law. John Stockton is a grump. He ought not to be the new coach of the Jazz.
Whoa.
He was always a grump while he was in Utah, and somehow he had this air of protection by the media and the press because he was the fair-haired boy. But you talk to people, there was nobody that was more difficult to fans, that was more arrogant, and just plain not a very nice guy. John Stockton, I don't think you ought to be coach. I think you ought to be disqualified because at least a certain proportion of being a coach is you're there to sign autographs for kids, and you're there to smile, and you're there to make sure that the team is well represented, especially if they're as bad as the Jazz are now.
That's the number one giver in NBA history, being called selfish.
I know. Assist leader.
I'm going to stand up for Johnny.
Ironic, isn't
it? Assist leader.
My gripe, I'm going to try to twisted a little bit here. I read a Gallup poll about Utah being the most generous state. 71% of Utahns donate money, 56% donate time. And so instead of giving a gripe, I'm going to give a call out for all those good Utahns that give of their time and money to make this a great state.
Hear, hear.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined on the political left by Jim Hughes and on the political right by Greg. I've been joined on the political left by Senator Jim DeBacchus and on the political right by Representative Greg Hughes. The program is produced by Tyler Ford. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for listening.